So there you go.
I'm rolling. I'm rolling.
Molly says it.
And he did.
Here we are, everybody. It is, what is it? Wednesday. It's Wednesday. What do you want to know Wednesday?
It's Wednesday.
I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to, it's Wednesday. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. This is the daily edition of this podcast where we try to make today make sense as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Here we are on March 132nd. Don't despair. It is, as Kai mentioned, What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, where we're taking your questions. Thank you for sending them in, because we know there are so many questions. We have a substantive bunch today. I'm excited. I think we might be able to actually drop some knowledge thanks to the internet. Some speed DuckDuckGo action here. Let's do it.
You know what's so funny? Speaking of DuckDuckGo, have you heard that DuckDuckGo is now advertising, as we say, on public radio? No. Have you heard that?
Yeah, what? Really?
Really interesting.
No.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
They're like, now's the time for privacy. Haven't you heard?
That's basically what they're saying. It's really interesting. But I digress. we start with Nico and Laura Raines. They are, like everybody else, hunkered down working from home. One of them apparently is in the spare bedroom, the other in the kitchen or living room, depending. Here is the question. With so many tech companies talking about keeping workers at home, we wonder about two things. First, how equitable is that? Companies pay for office space, but will they pay for bigger homes or remodels to create home offices? I'm in favor of that. And second, what about the longer-term effects on mental health for people no longer able to leave work at the office? I will take the second part first. I think that's probably really, 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 really real for a lot of people. Right. I mean, look, I've talked before on this podcast about how it's really tough to shut down at the end of the day when you're working from home, and it's 2 months in and I'm just getting the hang of it, you know?
Right.
So I think it's
on the other hand, it's 2 months in and you're getting the hang of it. So I would say that is a thing that can be learned. Yeah. Like of those two issues that, you know, I mean, I have been working from home for a long time, and I think of myself as a person with a pretty strong work ethic, but I will tell you what, when I'm done, I am done.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah. So you do. So that at least can be learned. There are definitely real questions to be asked about isolation and socialization, and frankly, Zoom. As we said, and I have a whole thing in the works mentally about that, because I think that there is something we're gonna have to reconsider the way that we do that. But to the question of like, is it
view. That's what you got to do.
Hide self-view. Self yeah, view. Actually.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Even the mental and emotional toll of just being like on in all those meetings or showing your personal space, or, you know, I think it's sort of like companies, I'm seeing a lot of the most progressive companies starting to say like, no, we do not have a requirement that you be camera ready for work. You know, that you keep your like resting, listening face on for eight hours a day. Like, so, so there are questions about adjusting to it. Yes. How equitable is it? Not very.
Not at all. And I will speak only for Marketplace here. They're not going to pay to get you a bigger house or remodel for a home office. But, you know, try it. See what happens. Also, just on a serious note, the whole, you know, deducting on your taxes for home offices and all that, super, super complicated. So be super careful. Super complicated.
Right. Because sadly, like generally, no. Especially lately with the changes to the tax code, which make sort of individual deductions a lot harder. So generally, no. You know, it's going to be company by company whether they reimburse for home equipment and things like that. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Like these tech companies that have come out and said, yeah, you know, we're going to have Coinbase, I think was one that said we're going to have a remote first workplace today. And it's like, okay, cool. Is there a stipend for your electricity bill?
Yeah, totally.
Or the space in your house?
100%.
It's an interesting question.
Yep. Totally.
Yep. The next one comes from Dan Vela in Los Angeles. He asked a question that we have actually been getting in the mailbag at least once a week for quite a while now, and that Kai often mentions on the show. But let's just put a fine point on it. The continued upward direction of the stock market seems irrational. Is it because the majority of trades are made by algorithm, i.e. there are no humans involved? Because if there were, there would be a lot more pessimism. What is the deal?
So look, let me throw this back on you a little bit and the algorithm thing, because we have talked about this, right? Who writes the algorithms?
Right, exactly. I mean,
people write the algorithms.
They're like a little out of control train, and in some ways they're like a bunch of a school of fish. If they see one fish go one way, then they all go the other way, and that's true. But that doesn't mean that there's not some. So when you see like a big move in one direction or the other, that's algorithm. But the question of like, do investors have confidence in the market long term, despite a looming, possibly K-shaped recession in this country, though, it seems to be yes. Like I got a guy, my financial advisor is like, I'm not worried. I think the market's going to be great. Thanks to the Fed.
Wow. That's really interesting. So look, the Fed's doing a huge amount to help out, but I do not share his optimism about the markets. I will quote again, I think on this pod, Josh Brown from Ritholtz Wealth Management. The market's not going to bottom until the virus tops, for sure. And I don't think we've seen the end of this thing.
And yes, so to that, to answer the question more specifically, it does seem irrational. And I don't know. And I think that there is, it is. Or it's either irrational or it is literally a mirror of the K shape. Like some industries, especially those ones that are investor heavy, there will be moves that protect that class. Mm-hmm. There will be moves that protect big businesses and big corporations and publicly traded outfits that have more access to capital than, say, all the small to mid-sized businesses who found that the loan process was a goat rope. And then there will be the ones at the bottom of the K who experience a much worse version. Like there is an argument, right, that the stock market is the ultimate, like, who was the lady? Marie Antoinette.
Let them eat cake.
Let them eat cake. Maybe it's not irrational because maybe they'll be fine.
Yeah. My bias is toward the pessimistic on the market, but whatever. Consult your own financial professional or Molly's.
I know. I mean, I guess we'll see. It's not like I'm sitting on a large portfolio here. It's more like help.
Okay.
But it is Liz a fascinating perspective, I will say.
It totally is. And look, lay people are not the only ones who are discombobulated by this, right? I mean, actual market professionals are like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, worry not that you are confused because these are confusing times. Liz Ciotti has a question that's both personal and financial because with the current relief package that was passed, millions more people are on unemployment and some are getting more money in their relief checks. We've talked about that. Anyway, so here is the question from Liz. My company is offering me a pay cut for less than unemployment pays. I am an immune compromised spouse. If I kept working, I would be doing physical therapy directly with patients in subpar conditions of northern Manhattan. Can or should I reject the company's proposal and stay on unemployment? I'm going to let you, first because I have.
This is where I did some DuckDuckGo-ing because this is, ironically, this is a question I am facing in my own family. My brother works at a health club that is just like dying to reopen, pushing, sending him texts about coming back to work, have done nothing to make the workplace safe and are seemingly pushing to reopen before state and local guidelines call for.
Yeah.
And it seems that in some ways this harkens back to the worker protection episode that we did where we talked about how OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, could totally create guidelines for companies around the pandemic specifically, could do so now probably in ways that would give businesses clarity about how they can reopen safely and what employees could do in those situations. They have not still. So people and companies are left to make their own decisions. And from what I can tell, it's a little, as with so many things, unclear. Like if your organization does meet state and local standards for reopening and safety standards for reopening, it seems like you can't say no. Mm-hmm. Like it's considered, it's called suitable work. Yeah. And if it's suitable work, you can't refuse that and then remain on unemployment. And you can't remain on unemployment just because it pays more. Right. If the work, and by the way, apparently, according to the Department of Labor, Employment and Training Administration, a general fear of exposure to the virus is not enough to refuse work or quit your job. If they're violating state and local guidelines, right, or not providing you with safety gear or doing things that are actually required in your state or locality, then you can potentially refuse and get unemployment benefits. But it also sounds like there's a whole bunch of hoops to jump through because OSHA, again, has not done anything, which is insane to me.
Yeah. I would just also point out two things. Number one, it may be relevant that you've got an immunocompromised spouse. Don't know.
Yep.
Number two, we had the executive director of the Texas Workforce Commission on Marketplace today. They're the people who run unemployment there. And we came across this basic situation. And he said, look, we're going to evaluate things on a case-by-case basis. We're not going to blanket shut anybody out. But nor are we actually going to give people free rein to not take suitable work. So, you know, it's worth making some queries, I would say.
I found a pretty good piece on CNBC about this, and we'll have a link to it.
Okay. All right.
On our website, makemesmart.org. This seems like a good time to tell everybody, actually, because we usually get a lot of tweets after the fact. Like, where's that thing that you talked about? It's on our website, makemesmart.org, in handy-dandy show note format. So you can read some of the guidance that I found on the internet. I love it. I love our new show note format. It's so useful.
Yeah, no, it's great. Super handy. Super handy.
Last up, we have Brandon Carter, who says, what's up with JCPenney last week? It talks about making an interest payment that pumps the stock up and then files for bankruptcy. This feels shady. What is going on here? Why not just file bankruptcy a little earlier and not make the payment? Could you explore this a bit?
Yeah. So look, here's the deal. It's no secret that JCPenney was gonna file for bankruptcy, right? But the company is obliged, right? The corporate officers and the board, they have a fiduciary duty to not do that until they've exhausted every avenue. And so I actually went to the SEC and I looked up the note that they had sent on the day that they made that payment. And so here's the deal. The payment was actually due and payable on May the 7th, okay? And I don't want to get too far down in the weeds here, but there was a five business day grace period after that, which they would not incur any penalty. And if they didn't pay it, it would not be considered a default. And then they could pay on the sixth business day, right? And that's basically what they did. And then the next day, they filed for bankruptcy. So my inference here, I forget, inference or implication? No, infer. I infer, right, that what they were doing in that five-day grace period while not making the payment was working really hard to stay out of bankruptcy. They realized they couldn't. They made the payment, and literally the next day they filed. You don't want to default, right? So you make the payment, and then you file, and that's that. And I don't – anyway, that's what happened.
Yeah, I don't really know either.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the share got goosed, right? But
does it matter in the long term?
My sense is they didn't do it for goosing the stock, right? Because the shareholders are going to get wiped out anyway, you know?
Right, exactly.
That's what bankruptcy does to you. So that was that one.
Yep.
Well, Other than that, you know.
No idea.
I was just going to say, you know, Penny is one of many, many retailers that are going this route, right? I mean, these are really tough times. Really tough times.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a piece on Marketplace about how some of them, like, they're going into bankruptcy hoping to be able to exit bankruptcy. Yeah. And that is the part that is so uncertain for many of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is
like, are you going to be able to come out the other side of this?
We talked about this the other day. Pier 1, right?
Yeah.
Pier 1 was in bankruptcy in February and is not going to be able to come out the other side. And so I'm going to be screwed on my kitchen dishware because, you know, that's where we got it.
I'm going to sneak this one in hopes that it's an easy answer, actually, because Kara Litovsky, on that note about bankruptcy and, you know, and the purchase by private equity that saddled some of these companies with so much debt that it forced them into bankruptcy, she said, if at all, are U.S. taxpayers on the hook for retail bankruptcies due to over-leveraged companies because of private equity buyouts?
Generally speaking, not. I mean, there are unemployment costs to be paid, right? There are pension issues, and there's a Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is woefully underfunded, so that's it. But, I mean, it's not like it's a huge thing, he says tentatively off the top of his head, right? I mean, it's bad systemically, but it's not a taxpayer burden in a ginormous sense. I mean, when you think of all the taxpayer burdens in this economy right now, that ain't one of them.
That's all. There you go. One less thing to worry about. That's our whole job. Right. We hope.
Oh, man. All right. So that is the 14-minute mark right there. We're going to cut it. We're back tomorrow with another daily. It's Thursday. In the meantime, More questions, please. Marketplace, make me smart at marketplace.org. Subject line, of course, questions. Otherwise,
we'll see you then.
Good rest of your
hang in there.
Listening to this. Yeah.
Hang in there, friends. Yeah. I'm here to tell you it's okay if you feel like the laundry is actually lapping you, that there's more. There, you had the clean laundry, but it just stayed in the basket, and then you took the laundry out of there, but now all that stuff is dirty again, and you just, it's a circle of hell.
I proposed to my wife and children the other day a really fun family activity for this weekend. We could have a 5-person, 2-hour clean the house party. And they were not excited about that.
I tried that one too. Some yelling happened. Might have been me. I'm not really sure. Anyway, Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. Ethan Peretz is our video intern. And thanks to writer-producer Erica Phillips.
Drew Jostad engineered today. Our theme music was composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez. Had a woman tweet at me today that she was humming our theme music. I sent it to those guys. They were happy. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. There we go. Boom. Yeah. They were like, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
That's awesome. It happens to me, too. It's because it's the daily now. And because we are essential podcasting, according to Vanity Fair.
I saw that.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.